Good morning. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Preventing Homelessness Division to order. The CLA will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Gomez?
Present.
Gomez present. Keeler? New Brindley?
Present.
New Brindley present. Davids? Heinrich.
Present.
Heinrich present. Hollins. Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein present. Howard.
Present.
Howard present. Cagle excused.
I'm Petersburg. Present.
Oh, my apology. Cagle's present. Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg present. Ryer.
Present.
Ryer present. And we do have a quorum.
And Vice Chair Keeler has joined us, I noticed also.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler. Next is the approval of the minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 10th, 2021?
I would move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Representative New Brindley moves approval of the minutes for February 10th, 2021. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, if we could unmute to take a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, the motion prevails and the minutes for February 10th, 2021 are approved. So we have two bills before us today. Before we get into the bill presentations, I just wanted to take a few minutes at the top of the committee, if with your indulgence. So on January 27th, we had a presentation from the Department of Corrections about the way that people who've been involved in the criminal justice system are impacted by homelessness. And on that day, we received public testimony from Mr. Daniel Ford, who has personal experience with those issues. I learned in the last few days that Mr. Ford passed away recently. So this summer and fall, there were encampments of unsheltered people around the Twin Cities, certainly, and all over the city, including in MLK Park, which is close to my house and in my district. Like a lot of these sort of sanctuaries and parks, you know, there were real relationships, enduring relationships created between sheltered and unsheltered residents. In a lot of cases, we saw, I think, like neighbors stepping up to fill in the sort of gaping inadequacies in our homelessness response system. So across the Twin Cities, certainly, you know, over several months, volunteers, some with the Minneapolis Sanctuary Movement, some sort of just in neighborhoods where encampments popped up, really stepped up to provide day-to-day support with food, security, sanitation, and then also what I've noticed is this sort of, there's a longer-term relationship and longer-term support to those who have sought sanctuary in the public parks as people have transitioned into permanent housing. So like for me, hardly a week passes without seeing an appeal on social media from one of my residents in the Kingfield neighborhood near MLK Park with an appeal for help, you know, from everything from like getting pots and pans or like, you know, kitchen essentials or the stuff that folks don't have when they're able to move into permanent housing. Or, you know, I remember like kicking in a few dollars so that one of the residents of MLK who was a parent could get presents for their kid over Christmas. And so, you know, the way that Daniel came into our committee was through some of these neighbors and volunteers, constituents of mine. Raquel, C.D. Wagner, and Sarah Kettering, who was the person who was helping Daniel the day that he offered the testimony. And so I just want to share with you briefly a social media post that Raquel made about Mr. Ford. So I'm quoting her now. Last week, my friend Daniel went missing. The MLK crew, residents, and volunteers spent the week searching for him. And on Saturday, I was asked to file a missing persons report that resulted in us learning that he had passed away early last week. Dee was an incredible person. His story was full of so much tragedy, but he was one of the most kind and joyful people you could meet. Just a week before his death, he testified before the House Committee on Preventing Homelessness, and we did this Zoom hype session both before and after his testimony. He was just grinning from ear to ear, laughing, and enjoying all the younger female attention, I'm certain. That was the last time I saw Dee. The picture here is from that same day when Sarah took him to celebrate how well he did in sharing his story with his favorite, Chili from Wendy's. You can see he was feeling so good about himself. My heart has been heavy the last few days with the knowledge of all he went through and how close we were to getting him to a really well-supported place where he could lead the life he deserved. We all loved Daniel, and I'm so grateful that in the housing he'd been in for the last couple of months, he had a lot of moments just like the one pictured, the happiness of simple pleasures and pride in yourself. I didn't want his death to go unremarked because of his status as an unhoused person. He deserves to be remembered as the beautiful man he was. May you rest in power, Dee. And there's this like beautiful photo of Mr. Ford that accompanied this post of him just kind of like beaming and enjoying his Wendy's chili. And I'll see if Raquel will let me send it around to you guys. So, you know, when I found out that Mr. Ford passed away, I went back and listened to his testimony again, and a couple of things struck me about it. One was, you know, he talked about having experienced three traumatic brain injuries and the impact that that had on his life and the way that he felt that that kind of led him into a place where he was incarcerated and then contributed to some of the challenges that he had in coming out of incarceration and finding, you know, stability in his relationships in his life and opportunities for housing and a job. When he came in front of our committee, he didn't ask for anything for himself. He asked that we create opportunities for people like him, for people who had been through some of the things that he had been through. Opportunities to have access to the basic things that all people need: housing, a job, stability, medical care, mental health care. I wanted to take a few minutes just at the beginning before we get into the kind of substance of our meeting today. Just for us to remember the humans that are at the center of this work and of all of our work at the legislature. The other thing that I think about is hearing, you know, how important it was to him to be able to share his story with us, and that we not minimize or gloss over what it takes sometimes for people to come in front of us in the legislature and share personal things. And, you know, how we need to carry those stories with us and carry the lived experience of people in our communities with us. And so, I'm really grateful that Mr. Ford was able to share his story with our committee. And I will carry it with me, and I ask us to carry it together collectively as a committee as we do this work and as we seek to make life better for people in the way that we all deserve. And so maybe we'll just take a moment to think about Mr. Ford before we move on. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate it, committee, for just allowing me to remember him today. So our first bill is House File 780, which will be presented by Representative Ryer. This bill was referred to this division by the chair of the full committee, Representative Schultz. Representative Ryer, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 780 be referred to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Thank you so much. Representative Ryer, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. As I was preparing for this, I was thinking about the testimony that we've been seeing in this committee and thinking about the people who have come before us and spoken. And so, Chair Gomez, hearing about Mr. Ford's passing strikes deeply and personally, and I appreciate so much his generosity of spirit in coming before us and everybody who has come before us. And I also thank you for bringing us this news and giving us a chance to honor him. We've all seen that homelessness is a growing problem. And we've heard from the people who come before us who have or are experiencing homelessness that having a safe home with services to address their individual challenges can be the resource they need to break the cycle. Since 1995, we've had a demonstration project in place known as the Metro Demo Project. House File 780 strategically and cost-effectively expands and updates this program, continuing its evolution from the program originally known as Group Residential Housing. Many individuals who are homeless have challenges with mental health and substance abuse issues. This expansion would create the resources immediately to provide needed housing connected with services for singles and families. This proposal came to me from Dakota and Scott Counties and the Minnesota Intercounty Association, or MICA. It was introduced last year and was moving through the legislative process when COVID brought everything to a halt. I'm pleased to say that this bill has bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate, highlighting our shared commitment to addressing homelessness. Here's what the bill does. Increases the Metro Demo from 226 units to 500 units over the course of 3 years. Expands the Metro Demo to the entire 7-county metropolitan area by adding Scott, Carver, and Washington counties, and updates the language to reflect the current uses of the program. These beds are managed across the region, not county by county, as part of a metro-wide collaborative. And with me today are Madeline Kassler from Dakota County and Danielle Fox from Scott County, who represent the collaborative and who will walk us through the program and the results it's shown. I look forward to your questions and ask for your support for this important legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Ryer. So we're going to move to testifiers now. First up is Madeline Kassler. Ms. Kassler, are you here?
Yes. Good morning, Madam
Good
Chair,
morning.
Members of the committee. Can you hear me okay?
We can. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Great. I am Madeline Kassler. I'm a Deputy Director with Social Services Department at Dakota County, and I am going to share my screen, if that's okay, and share a few slides.
Absolutely. Okay, so please.
Get that up. Let me know when you can see my screen.
All right, we've got it now.
Great. So thank you very much for hearing this bill this morning and allowing us to testify in support of it. In partnership with the 7-county metro area and the Minnesota Intercounty Association, or MICA, Dakota and Scott counties are proposing an expansion of Metro Demo to more immediately and effectively provide housing for people who are experiencing homelessness. As you know, and as you've discussed this morning, there's a focused effort to end homelessness at all levels of government and with philanthropy as well. And while this problem seems daunting, the solutions are actually really straightforward. People need a place to live, a way to pay for that place, and support services. Rental assistance, which is a key way that we make housing units affordable, is a particularly scarce resource. The proposed expansion of the Metro Demo Project is a unique way to quickly expand access to rental assistance and support services. The Demo Project mimics traditional rental assistance with a person paying 30% of their income toward rent. Those who qualify can transition onto a housing choice voucher or other traditional rental assistance resources when and if those become available, while also retaining the services that they had when they were on the Metro Demo Project. So when somebody transitions onto another resource, that vacated demo spot can then be recycled to a new person. Currently, the statute provides 226 demo spots in four counties in the metro area, Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, and Anoka counties. The bill before you today expands metro demo by 274 spots, so making it an even 500, and adds Carver, Scott, and Washington counties. The metro area counties, under a formal cooperative agreement establishing the Metro Housing Coordinating Board, will jointly manage these resources and funnel them to places where our system is stuck. We will phase in the new resources over a three-year period and also divide new and existing assets, new and existing housing support demo assets among the metro counties equitably based on that needs analysis. The metro counties have recently identified 848 households, both families and single adults, who are unhoused and would qualify for metro demo. We recognize that that is a significant undercount of actual need, and also recognize that we're not trying to solve for the whole of homelessness through this proposal. Metro demo is just one piece of the puzzle, and the request to increase spots by 274 reflects that balance. We are proposing to strike some language that prescribes that 70% of the population must be exiting a treatment facility or hospital. By doing this, the demo resource would continue to target a population in need while maintaining flexibility to serve people who are falling through the cracks in our current system. As other resources grow and shrink and as the housing market changes, it's important to have a resource that can flex to fill gaps and meet needs more immediately. And that's what housing support demo does. The remainder of the strikeout language that you see in the bill provides some alignment with the broader housing support program and cleans up some obsolete language. So thank you for your time and consideration. I'm gonna hand it off to Danielle Fox from Scott County, who can speak to data and outcomes we've seen.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Madeline, and thank you and good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I am Danielle Fox. I'm the Adult Social Services Manager from Scott County Health and Human Services. Scott County is one of the counties who is not currently utilizing the demo project due to current legislation, but we hope to in the future due to the great recorded success we have seen with this program. As Madeline mentioned, this program is targeted at those who are experiencing homelessness and have additional challenges due to mental illness, chemical health, and or HIV. While all experiences are different given each individual person, we typically see these households have high barriers. Yet the demo project has been able to successfully keep people in stable housing, support them in addressing their service needs, and increase their personal income, which in turn increases the contribution to the program overall. The demo project participants have on average increased their income by 56% while in the program and have maintained an average of 6.6 years of housing stability, which I think we just see in human services is huge for this population in need. Individuals and families are given the opportunity to live with dignity independently in their own homes, and the coordination of supports they receive drastically decreases their need for deeper end services. You'll see on the screen and in your handout a visual of the success people have had in this program and some of the experience cost savings that stability has provided. Each vertical column in this visual is a month, and each horizontal line is a person. This is a point in time that was provided to us by the Department of Human Services. And the colors on the side demonstrate the various settings we typically see this population cycle through when experiencing the instability of homelessness. So the primary color, the green, is good. That demonstrates a period of stability for the person or household in the demo program or another permanent housing option. Black is homelessness, red is jail, and the orange and yellow show more costly staff settings. You can just see here the churn of people and these families who are in and out of various systems. And if we take a little bit of a deeper dive and look at a couple of specific examples, we have single adults in this project who have Previously lived in adult foster care settings for 10 years prior to the demo project. The typical cost for those adult foster cares can be in a range of $9,000 to $12,000 per month and is paid for by state and federal waiver dollars. We actually see some cases where that cost is much higher. After the person moved to the demo project, they maintained some in-home supports through waivered services. So perhaps they had 4 hours a day of a personal care attendant or a PCA, but even the combined cost of those PCA in-home services and the demonstration project cost give us a total savings of $6,000 to $9,000 per month and $73,000 to $109,000 on an annual basis, all while increasing that person's independence and overall quality of life. Another example that we looked at that we heard from one of our service providers is a single adult. Oh, I'm sorry, I see a question there, so I'll pause for a moment.
We'll just have you finish your presentation, then we'll go to member questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So another example we heard from our service providers is a single adult who had been experiencing homelessness for the last 10 years and had periodic mental health crises. They cycled in and out of camping to shelter at the cost of $50 to $80 a day, have contact with law enforcement and spent time in jail, which in Scott County, that cost is about $150 a day. They experienced hospitalization, required a stay at the Anoka Regional Treatment Center, which is close to $1,300 a day, and an IRTS or Intensive Residential Treatment Center following that hospitalization at $425 a day. And as the cycle continues, resources are needed from outreach teams, case managers, police officers, treatment centers, hospital emergency departments and inpatient staff, jail employees, correction staff, et cetera. Following the demonstration project, there's still a need for that individual to access mental health facilities and other resources, but it is at a fraction of what it was during the periods of homelessness for that individual. And so I think as program statistics have shown, these households are also likely to increase their income while participating, therefore making the program itself more cost effective over time as their contribution goes up in turn. So we are asking for your support today for this bill so that we may use the success and cost effective project of the demonstration project to create long-term solutions for people experiencing homelessness across the Seven County Metro. And just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for this opportunity. We're happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Fox. So I see a couple member questions. We'll move into that. First is Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my questions are not necessarily specific to the last testifier. I was just getting in the queue, so thank you. This is clearly an interesting and successful program, and I appreciate that. I'm wondering if Representative Ryer or someone else on the call maybe knows why this moratorium exists in the first place.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Representative Ryer, did you have an answer to that, or do you want to kick it to one of your testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley. Actually, my history does not go back that far, but I will say that right around not too many years before that, I was working in Ramsey County Human Services, and there had just been a general increase in the recognition that less restrictive housing, less institutionalized housing in general was a good thing for across populations, people with developmental disabilities, seniors, and people with other types of housing needs. So I would hypothesize that it was related to a general trend in how people were given resources. But hopefully either Ms. Fox or Ms. Kastner can give you something more concrete.
Ms. Fox or Ms. Kastner?
Madam Chair, Representative,
Ms. Fox, yeah.
What we have seen is that Representative Ryer is correct. I think this was a demonstration project. It was intended to sort of test something out to see if it worked. I think we've seen a lot of good data to show that that is the case. I think the focus on the specific counties that are currently allowed to do the project were based on needs demonstration at that time. where I think we've seen more homelessness in the suburban metro than we had previously, and just an overall increase in need.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. So perhaps this was sort of a pilot program to begin with, and this is just the way the language read to make that happen. Another question. I'm wondering, Representative Ryer, has a fiscal note been requested on this bill?
Representative Ryer.
Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. It has not. My reading of the fiscal note process was that it was better to wait until the policy had been agreed on in order to make sure there weren't changes so that a new fiscal note wouldn't have to be requested. So following this stop, I'll be requesting one.
Okay. Representative New Brindley.
Madam Chair, thank you. Well, my question is then, in the bill language, it requires an appropriation for two FTEs, but obviously there is no appropriation language in the bill. There isn't even a blank appropriation for that. So that's one concern. Obviously, we need to know the costs of that. And my other question is, we're doubling the size of the program. How will that be paid for?
Representative Ryer.
How will that be what? I'm sorry, you cut out a little.
Sorry about that. How will the cost of increasing the size of the program? We've got the FTEs that are a separate sort of issue with the appropriation, but how will doubling the size of the program be paid for?
Thank you. That's the part that cut out. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative New Brindley. It will be an appropriation. I am sorry I can't be more technical about it. Perhaps one of my presenters can. But what we do estimate from the awareness of the cost so far is that it'll be $3 million or so spread over 3 years. You'll recall that it's phased in.
And Representative New Brindley, so this will be going back up to the Finance Committee, where I think some of those questions will be answered. So if there's anything else, please proceed, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer. I appreciate that. And I wish we had some better fiscal information right now, but I appreciate the information. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Representative Howard, I believe, is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill to the testifiers. It's just a really excellent test case about just the ripple benefits of when folks have housing stability. And so just a question and a comment. Piece of legislation that I am authoring is a housing subsidy bill that would be much broader, obviously with larger costs. And part of the reason for that is that there aren't folks who might qualify for federal assistance aren't either on long waiting lists. And I'm curious, do you find that folks that you're working with are on long waiting lists to receive Section 8 vouchers and that this program is helping fill some of those gaps?
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard. I'd like to defer that to either Ms. Fox or Ms. Kassler based on their experiences in their counties.
Ms. Kassler, it looks like you're unmuted.
Madam Chair, Representatives, yes, we do find that people are on long waiting lists and often on waiting lists that we as counties have no influence over or control over. And while we're trying to balance, using shelters as an example, that's right now where we're seeing a lot of our pressure points. We've stood up a lot of shelter capacity in the 7-county metro area, especially since COVID started. We've seen an increase in shelter capacity. We haven't seen a similar increase in tools to help people move out of shelter. And we've seen this come up over and over again with encampments, with homelessness over the past several years. As we develop the emergency solution, we also need to think about what the exit long-term solution is, so we make the best use of those emergency resources. We find that people are on Section 8 wait lists throughout the metro area open periodically. They fill up very quickly. They close down. People don't have access to that federal resource that is the right long-term resource, but people don't have access to it in the quantity that is needed. We have a lot of other smaller state and federal programs that provide resources, but they also aren't necessarily accessible to people in different points in our system. We need all of those resources, and we need more of all of those resources. This one resource gives expands capacity where we need it, and also gives counties a little bit of control to point it in the right direction. So right now, with any capacity that we have a little tiny bit of capacity on the demo program, and we're funneling that directly to our shelters in the metro area because we need to help people move out of those shelters because there's a long waiting list of folks to get into those shelters. So if we need more of that, and no, people don't have access to those resources when they're needed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kessler. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that response. And just again, to reiterate, this really seems like an impressive and pilot project that we should figure out ways to expand. And so I really thank that Representative Ryer for bringing this bill forward. And to just one comment to the overall cost, based on the presentation, it seems clear that purely from an economic or budget perspective, making this kind of investment is going to save costs down the road. This is, again, the ripple benefits are many when people have housing stability, and I really appreciate how this bill tackles that problem. Thanks.
Thank you so much for that, Representative Howard. And I feel like that really highlights a challenge to us in this space is that making investments in one place will save resources in other parts of the budget. But as far as I'm new around here, right? But like, I don't know that we have a good way of accounting for that. And that's definitely a challenge as we think about, you know, our competing priorities in the context of, you know, always like constrained public budgets. So I appreciate Representative Howard for bringing that up. And I hope that we as a committee can really continually grapple with that, with the cost of inaction, the cost of not taking affirmative steps. You know, there's also a cost to not doing anything. So, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Ryer, for bringing this bill. I strongly support it. And Madam Chair, you really framed something on my mind and my question, and I really appreciate Ms. Kessler and Ms. Fox's testimony, and perhaps this could be for Ms. Fox. You Ms. Fox did a fantastic job of really, you know, articulating these different services that are saved. You know, I don't remember exactly the line items, but I wrote down notes: $150 a day, $1,300 a day, $425 a day. Then there was another one, I think, something like $12,000. When the cost is something like 953, I think it was, per day. So I'm wondering, and again, I feel, Madam Chair, you did such a wonderful job of bringing this back in terms of people, that we're really talking about people. So I feel like, you know, we are talking about numbers here, but let's keep in mind this is about people and improving people's lives. But Ms. Fox, have you or Scott County really added all of these up and over time been able to quantify the cost savings, you know, again, all these different line items, you know, versus the expense, you know, over a year or 6 months or something like that? Because I think it would be a very impressive number. And I think it gets to what Chair Gomez was talking about in terms of these investments really pay off. So, yes, I know that we're, I think the fiscal cost of the staff will be worth every penny on this fiscal note, Representative Ryer, when it comes in. But just wondering, Ms. Fox, if you've done that kind of life cycle, you know, cumulative cost analysis for this project.
Ms. Fox?
Madam Chair, Representative, thanks for the question. I think, Madam Chair, you hit it on the head. It is really difficult for us to quantify that. However, I think we've been working to try to identify how we can compare some of those costs and what we see the outcomes might be. As you saw, the visual sort of outlines the data that we have as a point in time count of people who have participated in that demonstration project. But Dakota County has been working on pulling some numbers about our current shelter expenses and how those would shift if additional demo slots were available. So we continue to work on articulating those. Some of them are easier than others. But if we compare just the shelter costs that would be saved, again, as Ms. Katzer spoke to, we would still need to utilize those resources for other emergency situations, but the movement of those individuals helps create a pathway out so that we can support the overall infrastructure of our resources. But even if we just look at the shelter costs that we anticipate we would be saving long-term, that's one of the cheapest comparisons we can do. As you noted, those jail costs are $150 a day. A treatment center can be over 400, and if they end up in an institution-like setting, that can run close to $1,300 a day. So I think we're close to doing sort of that low-level cost comparison, knowing that that potential savings could be far greater than that.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Yeah, Representative Hornstein, go ahead.
No, I just, again, want to thank you both, Ms. Fox and Ms. Katzer, because I've not, you know, we know as a fact intuitively and otherwise that, you know, this makes so much sense, this approach, but I've never really seen it quantified in this way. And I appreciate that a lot. And I think it really makes the case for not only Representative Ryer's bill, but a number of bills that we are looking at and approaches we're looking at, particularly as it relates to wraparound services. So again, thank you. And, you know, I appreciate this bill quite a bit. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Are there any other member questions or comments before we have Representative Ryer renew her motion? Okay, seeing none, Representative Ryer, would you like to renew your motion that House File 780 be referred back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee? Oh, you're on mute, but I see you're nodding, so.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. The committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Gomez.
Aye.
Gomez, aye. Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Davids.
Davids, aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hollins. Hornstein.
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Ryer.
Aye.
Ryer, aye. Hollins.
Aye.
Hollins, aye. There are 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 780 is on its way back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Thank you so much, Representative Ryer, and thank you, members. So our last bill for the day is House File 900. This bill was referred to the division by the chair of the full committee, Representative Schultz. Vice Chair Keeler, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Keeler, you also have an author's amendment labeled A1. Would you like to move your amendment to put the bill in the form that you'd like?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Great. Representative Keeler offers the author's amendment to House File 900 labeled A1. Does everyone have the amendment? And is there any discussion on the amendment that she's putting forward? Hearing none, we're going to take a quick voice vote on this, if folks could unmute. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Keeler, Thank you so much for presenting your bill. Can you please explain it to the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 900 is designed to create a task force to work on our Shelter Bill of Rights. Really, the bill is very simple. It outlines a membership, and then it's establishing a collaborative team. I think we all know that it's important that we work together to make decisions, and so it's a collaborative effort between agencies, community organizations, and individuals who have experienced homelessness. Bringing those three components together, we hope that we can really see all lenses this way. Through this effort, we will have an initial report and a final report. This will help guide us in the future to some of the areas that we really need to work on. The duties of this task force would include, but aren't limited to, just to conduct some research, identify policies, rights, and responsibilities, review treatment of shelters for residents, time limits in residency, access to emergency and healthcare, but also accommodations for our residents. What we've heard is that there's so many stories and so many different people who are in our shelter system that we want to make sure that we're accommodating for everybody, whether it's flexibility in jobs, whether there's different doctor's appointments, and so on. And so I would appreciate your support, and I think we'll move over to testifiers.
I'm muted. Sorry. Thank you so much, Vice Chair Keeler. We have several testifiers. I'm going to ask folks to keep their comments to, 2 to 3 minutes if possible. First up, we have Tyra Thomas with Street Voices for Change. Ms. Thomas, welcome back. If you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Madam Chair and the committee members. My name is Tyra Thomas, and I am an original member of Street Voices of Change. Just to share a little bit about who we are a group made of about 150 folks, and it's a group made of individuals who are currently homeless and formerly homeless. The group came together. Well, I came in to know the group because I had some traumatic experience at shelter in Hennepin County. And once I was able to attain housing, I thought to myself, I didn't want other folks to experience that same experience, and what could I do? And I ran into this very small group at Central Lutheran Church in Minneapolis. And the concerns of the conditions and things that were going on in the shelter that deemed to be traumatic was a common concern, and the group grew, and now we have 4 different locations. In the last 4 years, as us being together, we were able to come up with a solution, and that was the Shelter Residents Bill of Rights. I support this task force because for many, many decades, millions of dollars went into a situation around homelessness, and lived experience was not at the table. There was folks telling us what we needed without asking us what was needed or what was happening. How can we make it better? I've heard a great bill today before this one. I definitely support that as well. I just want to note that. And then I thought about when you become displacement. It could be a fire. It could be a flood. It could be a tornado. Divorce leads to it. Funerals, deaths, loss of the second income, which we know it takes about 2.5 times that just to keep us up with rent. And so I support the task force that would bring those groups of people together to make change, and that achieve a standard at shelters, which is really about aftercare from such a dramatic displacement. It should be like a home away from home, but an aspiring to their individual home and making their place in the community with dignity and respect. And so I thank you for allowing me to have the time to share today, and that that I support this bill, and I ask that you would do the same as we win together.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thomas, for being with the committee today. Next up, Sherry Shannon. Ms. Shannon, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for giving me this opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Sherry Shannon, and I'm a member of Street Voices of Change and also Envision Community. And I just wanted to say, because I experienced homelessness, I had some challenges while I was in the shelters. I was a single parent with two boys at the time. And some of the challenges that I was faced with, trying to hold a job and then plus making sure that I had a room when I get off work and to make sure that they didn't think I was out there on the street, so I would have to go get a letter or something each day I go to work and all that to make sure that I won't lose my place. And because of that, this is why, because I care for people that experience homelessness as we speak, as of today. And I support this this bill, and I also support the people with homelessness. And so I'm asking you guys to pass this bill because it's it makes people be treated fairly, and also and the shelters all around the state. So the people who is going through these changes as we speak right now is trying to have, they have challenges just getting a bed, getting into a shelter, having a bed. And the task force called for this bill will give people experience homelessness a voice all across the state. So I want to thank you for having me here today and giving me this opportunity. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your testimony today, Ms. Shannon. Next, we have Janelle Freeman-Anderson. Welcome to the committee, but welcome back to the committee, Ms. Freeman-Anderson, if you could introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Janelle Freeman-Anderson, and I am from Freedom from the Streets. I sit on the Michael board, and I am on a vision, and I am one of the original leaders with Street Voice of Change, and I still love my Street Voice of Change, no matter what happens. I was there when we made this bill. Tyra was Tyra was running the group. We all went and did this. We all sat and did this thing. We had hired workers, even Tyra. Tyra was pushing us to, like, come on. I guess she was tired of the shelters or whatever. I don't like to put words in people's mouth, but she was a great leader. And that I support this bill because the simple fact is Freedom from the Street started in St. Paul on May 10th, 2019. It was some horror stories from people that was in the shelters wanted me to, say something, and I couldn't really say anything because I really didn't know anything. I've been in the shelters, I'm formerly homeless, but I'm just saying, like, some people experience things that's more worser than others, especially men's, that people don't know, like sitting in that room and being a facilitator of Freedom from the Streets and hearing this man say, I am not gay. He had got raped in the shelter. And he just was terrified, and I didn't know what to do. And Jane Prince sitting on the side, and, she's like, oh, let me go call the police. Let me do that. The dude, like, disappeared on us because he said he'd rather stay outside than stay in the shelter. Everybody was trying to get him into a shelter, and I got called down to the main big shelter and talked to, because I know who he was. I could get knowing who he was. And he said, no, I stay outside. I'm safe outside. I can't go there. I can't do it no more. He said, I'm not gay. And that's the thing that he said, and it was making me want to cry because, man, just hearing these men say this thing over and over again, it's traumatizing. It's traumatizing of people, of many people in the shelters. And a lot of the shelters, like a big shelter, like Salvation Army, I remember I had to sleep with my shoes on my back. I was so glad that I was on a top bunk, because the simple fact is people stand over you when you're sleeping. So when you're down on the bottom, it's very scary. So only thing that I could think about is getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and running myself out of there, and don't look back, and don't come back until the time that it ends like 8 o'clock is I can't get in after 8 o'clock, so I'm gonna get in at 8 o'clock. So it's very traumatic, and people don't understand that. And one thing about Freedom from the Streets is I'm the founder of Freedom from the Streets because the people that's homeless should make decisions. People, y'all should really listen to the people that is homeless, that lives in this place. We had people come to Street Boys to tell us that they would dress up and go into these shelters and do this and do that, but they would never do that. They're too much fry to do that, you know, to be on these boards, to sit on these boards and not go into a shelter and sleep there and find out what's going on, what's really going on. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman Anderson, for your testimony. Next up, we have Rhonda Otteson. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Please correct me.
Actually, this is Matt. Oh. I'm going to testify instead of Rhonda.
Okay. Welcome, Mr. Trainer. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Trainer. I'm the Director of Organizing with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and I'm testifying today to emphasize our support for House File 900, the Shelter as a Bill of Rights Task Force. It's a positive step that the state can take to ensure that all shelter guests are treated with dignity and respect. This bill outlines many important features that we support, and the first is really being that expansive list of stakeholders that are going to be at the table to find solutions to the barriers shelter guests and providers face. We'd like to emphasize the importance of centering people with lived experience as an integral part of this task force to allow the stories of real people to be a guide for the changes. Additionally, we're supporting the task force because it'll bring together the myriad of stakeholders and perspectives that our statewide needs face. The bill language is specifically designed to gather input from providers of shelter, both in the metro and greater Minnesota. And that also includes specialized shelter providers. This expertise that they're gonna bring will be critical to designing a statewide set of rights for shelter guests without running the risk of putting our providers in a position that could set them up for closures or other unintended consequences. Finally, we're supportive of inviting stakeholder groups beyond shelter providers that advocate for specific populations around the state. The input of these stakeholders will be crucial to meeting the needs of the clients our shelters serve. So this bill, it's a step in the right direction, but we also really want to emphasize that this bill alone is not going to solve the barriers some individuals face in receiving shelter, because we know that there's a lack of access to shelter in 80 of our 87 counties. That remains, it's going to continue remaining, and our shelter operations lack the necessary resources to operate beyond a basic survival mode. This bill, it'll set up the framework for our aspirational and attainable goals, but to meet these goals, our providers will need intentional investments from the state. So thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House File 900.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Trainer. Next, we have John Cole.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of this division.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Cole. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. I'm the Interim Director of Align Minneapolis. John Cole is my name. It's a collaboration of 18 congregations addressing homelessness alongside persons with lived experience of homelessness. I speak here today in my capacity as the chairman of the Homes for All Task Force charged with responsibility for shepherding the Shelter Residents Bill of Rights into reality across Minnesota. This Homes for All Task Force, which has been meeting regularly since July of 2020, is comprised of persons with lived experience of homelessness, shelter providers, advocacy organizations, and agencies that serve persons experiencing homelessness. We have received input from persons with shelter experience in the Twin Cities and St. Cloud. We have received input from shelter providers in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bemidji, Mankato, Grand Rapids, and Moorhead. They all see value in what we are trying to achieve, legislation that is applicable across the state and to all varieties of shelters, providing safeguards and protections for vulnerable populations. Persons experiencing homelessness. They strongly support the establishment of a task force thoroughly studies the issue and will make sound recommendation that is just and equitable both for providers as well as residents of shelters. We have learned that this is one of the last remaining systems affecting thousands of our citizens in Minnesota that is unregulated. This needs to be addressed. It has been reported that up to 40,000 Minnesotans have a homeless experience in a given year. And it should not be that Minnesota has no statewide standards around emergency shelter services. We are mindful of the complexity involved in accomplishing this task, and so support for the statewide task force. This statewide task force, properly constituted with representation from all sectors, to investigate the matter and to make recommendations to the legislature on how this can be accomplished. A longstanding priority of the Homes for All Coalition has been to support policies and solutions driven by people with lived experience, and the Shelter Resident Bills of Rights is the number one priority for Street Voices of Change and Freedom from the Streets, who are the most active grassroots organizations at the Capitol, made up of persons with lived experience. This task force bill, HF 900, is the best way of making reality their goals of a Minnesota which provides a safe, dignified, and respectful shelter experience. I ask you for your support of this bill, and I thank you for this opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Cole. Finally, we have Ron Elwood. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Having a little visual trouble here, but I think I've fixed it.
Mr. Elwood, you're a little quiet. Is there a way, do you think, to improve the audio somewhat?
Is this better, Madam Chair?
It's a little better. I think that's good.
Thank you. I'm sorry for the problems. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. We are here to support House File 900. Appreciate Representative Keeler being the chief author and championing this bill. This is one of the few significantly large systems that affect such a large number of Minnesotans, where there are no standards or uniformity, cohesion, participant rights, or oversight. This is also a system that is extremely complex, as Mr. Cole pointed out. There's many different variations. For example, shelters serving just survivors of violence, shelters serving metro areas, shelters serving greater Minnesota, shelters that are publicly funded, shelters that are privately funded, and on and on. This bill would bring all those voices around the table for the first time. Its task is to develop a Bill of Rights for shelter residents, evaluate the feasibility of state oversight, and equally important, recognize the challenges that providers face in providing this essential service and ensure that adequate funding for these providers, if new responsibilities are imposed, can be obtained. So Legal Aid has had many clients who are shelter residents, and we are so pleased to be part of this coalition and roll up our sleeves and work collaboratively with everyone to fulfill the vision that this bill represents. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elwood. So Mr. Elwood was the last person I saw on my list, but I see that Karen Peterson, I think it's Karen. Did you want to offer testimony today on this bill?
Yes, please, if I may.
Yeah, please proceed. Identify yourself for the record and let us know your testimony.
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Karen Peterson. I live in, I'm the president of the Sheridan Neighborhood Organization in Northeast Minneapolis. And I fully support both of today's bills. And you've heard from a lot of people some really great things. And I want to lift up, people have mentioned Envision. I don't know how familiar all of you are with Envision communities. The sole aim is to not, you don't just build, give someone a house, you build a community. And this is built on the idea if you have stable homes, you'll have healthier living. Healthier living then means more savings, and then they tie the savings back into the community. And it's self-sustaining. And these are tiny home community, something I really hope you take a look at because it's a wonderful, it was the first time I had really equated stable homes to healthier outcomes and less use of emergency rooms. And so there's that. I wanted to mention that and to say that the shelters are frightening. That I've got two encampments in Sheridan neighborhood, which is pretty small. And during this big deep freeze, people didn't want to go because you get a short stay. So you get to stay warm for maybe a couple weeks, but you lose all your belongings. So then you get out and it's cold. Sorry, I get a little emotional. But then you get out and you don't have all the stuff that kept you safe. Your tent's gone, your sleeping bag and everything you need. So the Bill of Rights is huge. Same with hotels. Couldn't get someone to stay in a hotel because they still couldn't bring their stuff. Mm. So I'm handing out hand warmers to try to save some toes. So I really urge you to, I thank you so much for the work you're doing and urge you to support the bills. And I'm sorry, I'm going to pull myself together now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Peterson, and, you know, especially for the way that, you know, it's not usually in the kind of job description of a neighborhood organization to do this work, but you, along with, you know, the Kingfield Neighborhood Organization that I kind of referred to it when I was talking earlier about Mr. Ford, along with other groups across the city have really stepped up, and so we thank you. Is there anybody else who wishes to offer testimony on this bill? I don't see any. I'll give a moment to move on to any member questions or discussion. I guess I just wanted to quickly make a comment that, you know, I'm really thankful to Vice Chair Keeler for bringing this effort forward. I think that, like, when we were hearing, you know, I guess I was surprised, I'm going to be honest, you know, I was surprised when I learned how many people don't want to access the emergency shelter that exists. And I think that there's this way that we're like, oh, well, if somebody doesn't want to go to shelter, then, you know, kind of too bad. But, you know, I think hearing today kind of the different perspectives on this issue, it's like we really do need to, there are consistent issues that you hear. Ms. Peterson identified some of those, like around belongings. I mean, they're sort of basic things, but I just think the opportunity for us as a state to really take a comprehensive look at what our shelter is doing and what it's not doing and what it is that folks who are experiencing homelessness need from an emergency shelter response is just a really, and also, of course, this conversation about this being, you know, this kind of system that a lot of folks, tens of thousands of people in our, across our state access, where there's not really basic standards, there's not oversight, there's not regulation. And of course, we're asking shelter providers and other people in the homelessness space to be agile and to respond to emergent kind of situations. And so we need to find that kind of sweet spot where we're not like overly regulating something that we're asking to be flexible and agile, but we're also providing, you know, kind of some basic standards to people who are accessing the system. So this isn't easy, and that's why, you know, I just want to emphasize that, like, I think sometimes there's, like, in government, we're like, oh, geez, a task force. That's where, like, ideas go to, like, spin their wheels. But this is really, you know, this is just something where there's the need for urgent action, and I think there is the need for this kind of diverse group of folks to dig into this issue. So we're going to go to member discussion. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Keeler. We actually talked offline about this just a little bit, and I appreciate that conversation. It's a little overwhelming, actually, to hear some of the testimony. And honestly, I have concerns about this bill for other reasons, but honestly, based on the testimony today, it feels a little bit more like we almost need a DHS investigation more than we need a task force. There is stuff happening that should not be happening. There's no words for the experiences that have been shared, and I'm very sensitive to that. On the flip side, I have concerns about this from a very practical perspective, You know, Madam Chair, you just mentioned, you know, a task force to spin our wheels. A 50-person task force is pretty significant. And I have concerns about just the makeup of the task force, just in the sense that we've all tried to work in very large groups, and it's difficult to do really productive work. So I certainly have concern about that. But more importantly, I certainly support the premise of studying and figuring out what's happening in our shelter system. I think that's really, really critical. And I guess I'm wondering if there is anyone on the call who is specifically representing folks who run shelters, you know, Catholic Charities, or, I mean, they obviously have a significant footprint here. And I'm wondering if they can offer comment on what this might do. I just think there's unintended consequences when we put this in terms of a Bill of Rights. Like, when we talk about staffing ratios, well, what happens to the shelter then if they can't get enough folks to show up for work? Are we closing doors? What are the unintended consequences of that? So I'm wondering if there is anyone on, like I said, who rep, you know, from these shelters, who can speak to that maybe.
I'm not sure if there's a shelter provider on the call, but I saw that Mr. Trainer raised his hand. I don't know if you wanted to address Representative New Brindley's question or concern, Mr. Trainer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for the question. That was a part of our testimony too, is really lifting up some of these unintended consequences. And in the most drastic case, it could, if we don't carefully craft a Bill of Rights that is statewide and has input. I mean, there's some shelters in greater Minnesota that operate out of motels, right, or out of duplexes. So when we talk about staff ratios and things like that, we have to make sure that a Bill of Rights would be flexible enough to still make sure providers can do what they need to do in their local community, which is why we're really in the task force that John Cole mentioned, that Homes for All is convening. We're very cognizant of some of those unintended consequences, but we really feel like a task force could be that vehicle to make sure we think through all of those logistics, because the last thing we want to do is an already depleted shelter system gets even more depleted. Okay. So thank you for those type of questions and mentioning some of the providers that need to be here at the table with the shelter guests.
I saw that Ms. Thomas has her hand raised. I didn't know if it was to speak to Representative New Brindley's question or it was. Okay, please go ahead, Ms. Thomas.
Representative Brindley, you have been so thoughtful today. Two things that you have raised today are really important. When you talk about the fiscal agent earlier, and then now with, you know, should there be a DHS investigation? My personal story is I attempted to do just what you're talking about, and it became exhausting for my body to continue to rehash. And then I was stuck in the world of just complaints and not solutions. And so I had to gravitate towards community at large and how we can make a difference. And that my community at large, our neighbors who are not homeless, white privilege, if you will, would have to be subject to potential lawsuits, if you will, and I'm going to use that word, I mean, it's very strongly, that folks are doing everything that they think is right and things weren't going the way it was. And that's why our lived experience can make those changes without, in my words, in my way of thinking, that at a cost of all of Minnesotans, because they are doing the work, it just wasn't going the way they thought. And that's why our lived experience is so important at the table. And I thank you again for mentioning that, because that was some of my pathway. And to have an oversight like this task force is like so important that we can make those changes with gentleness and kindness to each other along the way. So thank you again for mentioning that. And certainly if, and then also I wanted to thank Representative Keeler. I know we were supposed to have a time to be together. I lost somebody during COVID. They were in a coma for 9 days. They were in the hospital for 20. So my head space has been like kind of all over the place. But I think your work as well, and I look forward to working with all of you on how we can make this change without shaming each other, if you will. And that's how I feel, because we have shelters and folks are doing the work, and it's about changing the hearts of those who deliver aftercare when someone's displaced, is what I see. But again, you really touched my heart mentioning those things, because those were some of the things I experienced. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thomas. Mr. Cole, did you want to speak to Representative New Brindley's question or comment, or did you have another issue you wanted to bring up? Okay, it's to this, because I also want to go to Representative Keeler to just get some response to Representative New Brindley, but please proceed.
Representative Brindley, just like to say that Catholic Charities is represented on our task force. And while they do have concerns about unintended consequences, this provided in the provisions of the Shelter Residents Task Force bill, they strongly appreciate the opportunity to contribute in the task force, because that's where they feel that these particularly contextual concerns and operation procedural concerns that may conflict with the Shelter Residents Bill of Rights can be aired and thrashed out, and we can find suitable accommodation for the varieties that exist of operating procedures and scale and sizes that obtain across the state. And we also receive feedback, similar feedback in the surveys that we conducted from Greater Minnesota, et cetera. So the task force is the place, and they look forward to being represented on that task force and to give feedback to the task force so that these things can be well ventilated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. I just wanted to go to Representative Keeler quick, and then we'll go back to you, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative New Brindley. I agree with you that the size is large. It's one of the first things that kind of flagged me too. I think my project management background says 50 people. It really is difficult. I would like to move that down a little bit, but it's not my space to know who and how to eliminate some spaces and make it smaller. So we have made a commitment with this group to work on how to maybe make it a little bit smaller and manageable before we present it to the Human Services Finance and Policy. So I would be more than happy to connect with you offline again, just to talk about some of those spaces, because I agree there's a fine line here between having enough people at the table, because it is such a big issue, and making it into a manageable task force. So I appreciate you bringing that up, and I agree with you, and we can discuss that a little bit further before we present it to the next committee. Thank you.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it just sort of along that same thought, I'm wondering if anyone can address, obviously there are a lot of really positive things in the list of things to study and figure out. And I'm wondering, are there any current requirements, or how is it handled right now? Like, for example, it lists things like access to emergency and non-emergency medical and dental care. How are things like that handled now?
I don't know if Mr. Trainer or Mr. Cole or anybody else who's kind of on the call, maybe who is really familiar with our emergency shelter system, has a comment about that. Mr. Trainer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So some of the specifics I can't necessarily address, because each shelter can have different practices, but I do want to state that some of the programs within DHS that do provide funding to shelters have some of these standards and guidelines in it. I don't want to paint the picture that all shelters, you know, are representing some of the stories that we heard today. There's great ones and there's some that need to do a little bit better, but it's really about a matter of investment.
and not being able to really hire that staff or, you know, make sure if there's somebody that's discharged from a hospital that has physical conditions that they can, you know, they're being discharged into the shelter system without being able to be funded to respond to that. So I do just want to lift up that, you know, I don't know if somebody is on DHS on this call and they might be able to answer it, but I think DHS for the programs that they fund do a good job of providing resources that some shelter guests need, but not every shelter receives those fundings, so they don't have to follow those guidelines.
Thank you so much, Mr. Trainer. If there's anybody else, I know that I saw, I can't remember who I saw on the call from DHS, maybe Ms. Graum or Mr. Wengard. I see you answer, raising sure. your hand.
Sure,
you
I can.
Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. Yes, I work for the Department of Human Services as a homeless policy specialist. And currently we provide grants to the Emergency Services Program and one federal program as well to about 40 shelters and motel providers all around the state. So we do that through a competitive grant process. And because, as Mr. Trainer has mentioned, the base funding for emergency services, the primary grant source is $844,000 a year, we struggle with setting realistic expectations for our providers. The average cost of shelter of the agencies we fund is around $45 a day, compared to some of the, you know, quadruple or 10 times that the other licensed settings that have been discussed today. So providing medical and dental access, you know, is challenging anyways, especially in some parts of the state, but it really varies by the level of funding that providers receive. So we try to have an expectation for services that's commensurate with the amount of funding the state is putting into that. And that's one of the reasons that we haven't put things into a contract, because the amount of funding that we provide to them varies as far as the services that they're expecting. And there is also housing support. I'll let another member of DHS speak to that. That's a different type of funding that doesn't go through a competitive grant process.
I know we have Ms. Graum. I'm maybe mispronouncing your name, from DHS on the line, if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have one of our policy experts, Ms. Christine Davis, on the line, who can respond to that.
Ms. Davis, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Christine Davis, I'm a supervisor in the Housing and Support Services Division at DHS. And as Mr. Wengard mentioned, housing support is another funder of emergency shelter in the state. Where that is the case, we do have room and board standards, minimum standards that are established in state law. We made big changes in 2015 to increase clarification of what those standards are. They also point to the Department of Health standards for emergency shelters that housing support funds, which includes a lot of things about the physical plant and some of the things, aspects of how the shelter operates and manages its operations. So we do have, for the ones that we fund, which are a percentage of shelters in the state, but for the ones that we do have things to lean on.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. And just our long-awaited sort of finance overview is going to happen this Friday at 10:30. And I feel like we're going to be able to dig more into some of the criteria around the different pots of funding that exist from the state perspective. So really looking forward to that. But I wanted to go back to Representative New Brindley, if you had anything further that you think won't be appropriate to kind of dig into more on Friday.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I asked that question about medical and dental care specifically because, again, I feel like this is another area where there can be major unintended consequences. You know, I think particularly with dental care, we know that that's already very, very difficult to access. And so if that is something that is difficult to provide in this setting, I'm concerned about the unintended consequences of that. That's really my biggest concern about the bill. And Madam Chair, just as sort of a general concern, you know, Representative Keeler mentioned, you know, willingness to work on this before moving it up to human services. And I just have a real concern about us making the best use of our committee. It seems like we have such an opportunity to really dig into these issues, and that we have an opportunity as a committee to make choices, make really good choices, and also make really hard choices about what programs are the most effective, what programs are helping people in a meaningful way, what programs give us the biggest bang for our buck. You know, where can we help a lot of people for the least amount of resources? How can we be efficient in all of this while remembering people? And I'm really concerned about sort of taking legislation in our committee and just moving it up. Not a single member of our Preventing Homelessness Division serve on the Human Services Committee. Not a single one of us have a voice on that committee. And I'm concerned that we're just taking this legislation and moving it forward, and we're losing out on an opportunity to really exercise a real privilege on our part to sit on this committee and shape what's going to happen. By just moving it forward, we lose a lot of that influence. So again, I appreciate the intent, but I'm just concerned about the many unintended consequences of this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Keeler, and to all the testifiers for bringing this important bill forward. I was going to initially make a comment similar to Representative Gomez that, you know, sometimes task forces around the legislature, it's like, you get a task force. And it's kind of a way to evade actually action. But in this instance, it really is the wise course of action, especially given the broad group of stakeholders that need to be at the table. And, you know, frankly, Representative New Brindley's concerns about unintended consequences are exactly the reason to do a task force, to bring people together to study this issue and to come back to the legislature to give us recommendations on an action plan. And so very grateful for this bill and the robust conversation we've had. And I'll be supporting it. I guess my one question for Representative Keeler, thinking in terms of the recommendations that we might receive back as a result of this task force, will those include recommendations about resources and funding that, you know, we might need for our shelters? I'm thinking of the testimony of Mr. Trainer, who called out, which is something that's absolutely true. You know, we're underinvesting. We don't have the investments we need to. And so I'm just curious if that funding aspect will be part of the discussion. What are the needs that we need to bring to bear at the legislature to make sure we have a shelter system that is meeting the needs of our community?
Representative Keeler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Howard. That's a good question. I guess this is part of the reason why I made the amendment that I did, so that we have an initial report in early February and then a final report in the end of August, because I think that we're not totally sure what this task force is going to bring to us. It could be funding, it could be resources, it could be also, there's been a lot of information that's been gathered already. And so some of it's just compiling that and making sure that we're not doing all of this silo work. So as we can work more efficiently and more effectively with the things that are already taking place, my guess is there will be some sort of funding and services support in either the initial or final report. I think that we know that this system is underfunded, so it wouldn't surprise me, but at this time, it's not a requirement or anything that's outlined in the bill. Thank you.
Representative Howard, is that good? Anything else?
That's good. Nothing further. This is a fantastic bill. I look forward to supporting it.
Thank you so much. Vice Chair Keeler, did you have any closing comments?
I don't. Just thank you to all the testifiers that continue to show up to share your stories and the impacts that homelessness has had on your life, and the fact that you've taken pain in your life and have turned it into power and moving it forward so that our next generation hopefully doesn't have to experience some of these things. I do really appreciate everybody and would really encourage a yes vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So seeing no further member hands, Vice Chair Keeler renews her motion that House File 900 as amended be referred back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the role.
Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, nay. Davids.
Davids, no.
Davids, nay. Heinrich.
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, nay. Hollins.
Aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, nay. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. There are seven ayes and four nays.
There being seven ayes and four nays, the motion passes, and House File 900, as amended, is on its way back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. So that was our final bill. As I mentioned, members, we have an opportunity on Friday. We're meeting at 10:30. That is Friday, February 19th. And we'll be digging into some of the ways that we finance the homelessness response in the state. I hope everybody can make it. And our next regular meeting is Wednesday, February 24th, and at 10:30 a.m. And with that, I thank you today, and we are adjourned.